Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 26th, 2022. Construction still underway for Marfa High School's new track, by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa High School's new track, which was originally slated to be fully completed in time for graduation ceremonies this Friday, is experiencing some slight delays. Friday evening's high school graduation will still be held on the field and will be made accessible to students and their families with routine processions onto the field. The delays are in part due to this week's rain and asphalt repairs that needed to be completed. The installation of the polyurethane surfacing of the track's top coat, is on schedule, and the crew is set to begin painting stripes on the six-lane track soon. The public opening date is tentatively scheduled for June 13th. Marfa ISD Athletic Director Linda Ojeda said the school will post informative signage and likely hold an orientation of sorts to inform the public about the new track and accompanying rules and regulations. For example, bikes and rollerblades will not be permitted, and precautions will need to be taken to ensure the track lasts well into the future. That's going to be a big thing, protecting it, said Ojeda. I know it's going to get a lot of great use. I think with us working together with the community, our students and everybody else, we will be able to take care of it in order for everyone to use it whenever they need it. The school board approved the construction of the brand new track in January, and work officially began on the site in March. The old track posed a safety hazard and was due for much-needed upgrades, school officials said at the time. The project is costing the school board $926,000, which is being withdrawn from their reserves or fund balance account. At a school board meeting earlier this year, Superintendent Oscar Aguero said even with the nearly million-dollar dip into the reserves, there would still be a remaining $2 million in their fund balance account, adding that in the past 7 years, since he has been involved with Marfa ISD, the district has never utilized the fund balance account. The track's continued maintenance will see the school board spending a recommended $5,000 to $12,000 every year or every other year for track cleaning and $245,000 every 10 to 12 years to re-top. Complete with a high jump area, pole vault runway, long jump, triple jump, as well as shot put and discus rings, the new and improved track will allow for the school district to host regional track meets. Ojeda said they hope to start hosting small meets as soon as this coming fall and will seek volunteers from the community to help run the athletic events. Blackwell School Bill passes U.S. Senate, by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Washington, D.C. On May 19th, the U.S. Senate passed a bill establishing a National Park Service unit commemorating the Blackwell School, a former segregated school for Mexican Americans in Marfa. The bill is awaiting passage by the House of Representatives, but after a few minor tweaks, boosters believe it will be successful. Texas has a rich and diverse history, and it's time for this piece of our story to receive proper recognition, Senator John Cornyn, who introduced the bill alongside Alex Padilla of California, wrote in a statement. I introduced a bipartisan bill to establish the Blackwell School as a National Historic Site, making it one of the few national park sites that specifically commemorates Latino history and culture. Blackwell School operated from 1909 to 1965, and at one point served over 600 students in multiple buildings before integrating with Marfa Public Schools, which before 1965 only educated white children. Students were prohibited from speaking Spanish. In 1954, the same year as the landmark Supreme Court case, Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, teachers at the school held a funeral for Mr. Spanish and instructed students to bury slips of paper with Spanish language words written on them. Segregated education would continue in Marfa for 11 more years. Allowed because it wasn't legally enforced, it was just what the community expected. The journey to the Senate floor has been over 16 years in the making. Blackwell School Alliance, the organization currently tending the grounds of the historic site on Abbott Street, was formed in 2006 by community members who had attended the school. 3 years ago, President Gretel Enke ran into then-Congressman Will Hurd in a coffee shop in Alpine. He was really tuned into national parks because he had so many national parks in his district, Enke explained. Looking back, things don't normally happen that fast. After years of hard work, Enke received a text message from a staffer at Senator John Cornyn's office announcing the good news. The only major change that will need to happen before deliberation in the House of Representatives is clearer language demarcating the boundaries of the proposed historic site. We don't expect that there will be any disagreement in the House because it doesn't change the bill, it just clarifies the bill, Enke explained. Enke has been getting updates from Congressman Tony Gonzalez, who will be shepherding the resolution through the House with fellow Texas Representative Filemon Vela. For now, timing is up in the air. It really is just a matter of getting back on their schedule, said Enke. The passage of the bill isn't the only good news the Blackwell School Alliance has celebrated recently. A fundraiser over the winter for major upgrades to the historic structure raised almost $100,000. The first step is going to be the architect's build plan, and that's slightly on hold because we're so close to being designated that we want to make sure we're doing it in partnership with the National Park Service and considering all of their requirements regarding historic preservation, said Enke. In Enke's words, success breeding success has also attracted major media attention. Reporters from the L.A. Times profiled the group's efforts back in February, leading to well wishes and curiosity from people all around the country. The more people hear about it, the more people want to cover it, she said. The next step will be hosting a community meeting, tentatively scheduled for Sunday, July 17th. At the meeting, Enke and the rest of the Blackwell School Board will meet with Marfa residents to discuss all that having a new park service unit in town entails. One of the things that we have on our list to talk about at the July meeting is, what does it do to the neighborhood, said Enke. Obviously, there's going to be increased traffic around where the Blackwell School is, so how do we maximize the benefits and minimize any negative impacts that might cause? She expects the positives will far outweigh the negatives. One interesting statistic is that for every dollar that the National Park Service spends in communities, there is a $4 payoff in terms of tourism, receipt, revenue, and jobs, and so forth, she explained. So there's a real economic benefit to communities. Just putting the stamp of the National Park Service on the site is going to bring a whole new kind of heritage tourism to Marfa. At her day job at Fort Davis National Historic Site, another local Park Service unit, 50,000 visitors a year flock to learn about the region's military, African-American, and indigenous history. A lot of those people that might not be interested in art are still going to divert to Marfa because they're National Park fans, she said. FAR, Inc. and the rest of the Blackwell School Alliance, centering Mexican-American history in Marfa, is worth the hassle of trying to pass legislation. Legislators and observers across the country agree. There are so many chapters of American history that have gone unseen, unheard, and unacknowledged, wrote National Parks Conservation Association Theresa Pierno in a press release. Despite the difficult history connected to the Blackwell School, today is a day of joy and celebration that these students' stories will soon be told by our country's greatest storytellers at the National Park Service, Pierno continued. The students of Blackwell deserve no less. The Blackwell National Historic Site will soon shed light on an often overlooked injustice in American history, and it will be an important step forward for including Latino stories at our parks. As Accuser speaks out, the criminal case against Base Camp Terlingua founder Jeff Leach is dismissed by Allegra Hobbs. Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. On Friday morning, the long-simmering criminal case against Terlingua hotelier Jeff Leach, who was indicted by a grand jury on a felony sexual assault charge over 2 years ago, was brought to an end. At the request of the local prosecutor, a Brewster County judge dismissed the case, voiding the possibility of an anticipated trial. Accusations against Leach, a prominent entrepreneur in the remote border town, first began emerging in 2019 when former employee Katie Milam told authorities that Leach had held her down and attempted to forcibly kiss her, telling her he gets what he wants. Leach responded by suing Milam, who also goes by Schwartz, for defamation. But it was there in civil court that more women began coming forward with similar allegations. After Milam, three more women swore in affidavits that Leach had assaulted them. One of those affidavits, from a woman alleging Leach had raped her in 2014, led to his indictment in 2020. That woman, Shauna Graves, resisted letting the case die quietly. 2 days before the dismissal, Graves submitted a statement to the court opposing the motion. "I believe this case needs to be heard, as uncomfortable as it will be for me," she wrote. "This happened to me. I did not want to bear this cross, but I also did not ask for that act of violence to occur, nor for all of the years of difficulty and darkness I experienced afterwards." Though the statement was sealed by the court, Graves chose to share it with the press with her name attached, a dramatic reversal, as she had always asked to remain anonymous in coverage of the case throughout the preceding years. When asked why she was choosing to emerge publicly now, her emailed response was brief. "I'm coming forward now because I used to have faith in the system, and now I don't." But the case was ultimately tossed at the request of 83rd District Attorney Ori White, who cited insufficient evidence. His office simply did not believe there was enough to sway a jury beyond a reasonable doubt, he told the Big Bend Sentinel shortly after the motion was filed. As a complaining witness in a criminal case in which it is the state, not any individual, that brings charges against an alleged perpetrator, Graves only had so much to say in the case that emerged from her accusation, only so much recourse in opposing its fate. In her statement, she recounts her attempts to have some degree of input in the proceedings. By her telling, she was contacted by a prosecutor with the DA's office on April 28th, and notified of the motion to dismiss. She was shaken by the phone call, she says. He said no jury would believe me, she writes. It was a case of he said, she said, that I had no evidence that the sexual assault occurred. She writes that she heard from a victim coordinator with the DA's office on May 11th, the day before an initial hearing on the motion to dismiss was to be held, and was told she would be able to speak, though the coordinator could not say definitively where the hearing would take place. Graves retained the counsel of Alpine attorney Jody Cole, who is representing Milam against Leach's defamation suit and is representing a former assistant prosecutor with the DA's office in a lawsuit against White. Graves claims that she arrived in Brewster County District Court on the morning of May 12th, only to be told she would not be permitted to speak, but she could file a written statement that would be sealed. Leach himself was present in the courtroom that day, she says, an unanticipated shock. Cole also recounts these events in a separate court filing in Milam's civil case. Graves had quietly waited for her day in court since filing her affidavit. She had declined to speak to the press and had asked to keep her name out of news coverage. In her statement, she recalls the disappointment of being denied that day and feeling that the DA had no interest in taking on her case. She had not been contacted by White before the assistant prosecutor called her in late April, she claims. Not only were the DA's office unhelpful in navigating the legal system, uninterested in talking to me about my experience and about the case, unhelpful in informing me of any options I might have from here, unsympathetic about my experience, but then when I showed up to court, they seemed to not want me to be there, she writes. The district attorney's office did not return requests for comment on the contents of Graves' statement. Marfa Public Radio reported that the office had declined to comment for the outlet's story on the matter. In a previous conversation with the Big Bend Sentinel, White had explained that his office was overwhelmed by cases and had to focus on those they felt would be successful. We just felt like the jury would not believe that it was not consensual, he said of the Leach case. On Friday, the remote hearing on the dismissal took place over Zoom, with Judge Tryon Lewis presiding in the place of Judge Roy Ferguson, who was absent to conduct legal training, Lewis explained, and Assistant 83rd District Attorney William E. Parham representing the state of Texas. Leach was present, along with his attorney, Ray Lifesti. The dismissal was swift, with fewer than 10 minutes devoted to the final discussion of a scrutinized case that had ground on for years. But there was some discussion, however brief, regarding the statement. Judge Lewis asked Parman, then Lifesti, if they had been able to review the statement. Both said that, yes, they had, though mere minutes before the hearing. Parham began to comment on the contents of the statement. I have some difference of opinion as to what was stated therein, he began. I was not asking your opinion on anything, the judge interjected. Parham then stated that he had reviewed the statement approximately 27 minutes prior. The judge then directed the question to Lifesti, had he had the opportunity to review the statement, to which Lifesti responded yes just a few minutes ago. The judge opined briefly before signing off on the dismissal on the heavy burden the district attorney's office bears in deciding which cases to pursue. In the state of Texas, under our Constitution, only the state can bring a prosecution, and in a felony, the district attorney is charged with the right and the burden of deciding what of those cases in the office that have been brought forward, whether the law and the evidence supports the continued prosecution of the case, said Lewis. It's often a heavy burden, but it is a burden. It is the prerogative under the Constitution and obligation of the district attorney to make that decision. In the best interest of justice and in the circumstances of the case, and that decision is not reviewable by the court. Judge Lewis then signed the order to dismiss the case. Afterward, Cole, still acting as Graves' attorney in her limited capacity as a complaining witness in the case, issued a statement. People who have been assaulted sexually should have no shame or fear about speaking the truth. The times are changing. Even if there is still some fear and resistance about taking prosecution seriously. We want all courageous survivors who report crime to know that many people do take these kinds of offenses seriously. The shame resides with the perpetrators, not the innocent. For those who work closely with victims of sexual assault in the remote region, the case and its outcome are all too familiar. Gina Wilcox, program coordinator for the Family Crisis Center of the Big Bend, noted that sexual assault cases are very difficult to prosecute, in part due to a lingering stigma felt by victims, but also due to a lack of physical evidence and witnesses. The jury has to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt for criminal charges, and a lot of times there's just not enough to do that, she said. For that reason, prosecutors may decide the monetary cost and the stress of a trial, often a traumatic experience for victims, is not worthwhile. Resources available for victims of such crimes in rural regions are extraordinarily limited. The Crisis Center, with locations in Alpine, Presidio, and Terlingua, is one of two of its kind in the Big Bend region. The other, in Fort Stockton, is fairly new, noted Wilcox. We're the primary agency to provide services for victims of sexual assault in this region, she said, and we do the best we can, but it is challenging. Wilcox said she had seen firsthand how dismissed cases and dropped charges impact victims' willingness to come forward. Any of these high-profile things, even if it's just something local, they're seeing it in the news or in the newspaper that the charges are being dropped. They're like, well, why should I? Said Wilcox. I've had numerous clients ask me that question. They did this and this and this with this case, with that person. I knew this person who pressed charges, but nothing ever happened. So why should I? Why should I put myself through that? And I don't blame them for feeling that way. Still, Wilcox said that she encourages victims of sexual violence to speak to someone, if not law enforcement, then a counselor or someone else who can provide assistance. The Family Crisis Center of the Big Bend operates a 24-hour hotline at 800-834-0654 for this very purpose. The center provides accompaniment for victims who wish to speak to law enforcement. Even as the criminal case draws to a close, Leach's civil suit against Milam has been given new life after the 8th Court of Appeals in El Paso reversed a lower court's dismissal of the suit. A status hearing on that case will take place at the end of the month. Marfa Activity Center pool reopens for the summer season May 31st, by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa Activity Center, MAC, pool, which has been closed to the public since May 2020, is set to reopen May 31st for the summer swimming season. The pool will remain open until August 6th. At the latest city council meeting, city manager Mandy Roan reported that pool bathrooms were being cleaned up and repaired by the Public Works Department and would be good to go in time for the reopening. Admission will be $3 for adults, $1 for kids and seniors, $50 for adult passes for the summer, $25 for kids and seniors passes for the summer, and $75 for 5-member family passes for the summer. The age limit for unaccompanied children remains at age 8 or older. Pending proper staffing, the facility will be open to the public 5 days a week from Tuesday through Saturday and will be available to rent for private parties on Sundays. The tentative daily schedule will be lap swim from 10 to 11 a.m., water aerobics from 11 a.m. to noon, closed for lunch from noon to 1 p.m., and open swim for the remainder of open hours from 1 to 6 p.m. The city will post pool updates on their website, and the Big Bend Sentinel will provide more information as it becomes available. Sunday rentals will run $150. The city is not yet taking reservations for private pool parties and is set to discuss a pool rental agreement and swimming waivers for minors at their next city council meeting this Thursday. The city will soon host a special meeting and workshop involving the public, proposed for 6 p.m. June 15th at the MAC building, to garner further feedback about the pool and the entire facility, which was recently the subject of a feasibility study. This will be the second public meeting the city has hosted to discuss the public's wishes for the pool. The last one was held in February. The pool, which is leaking and experiencing other significant structural issues, was originally built in the 1960s. A public survey recently circulated by the city revealed that residents favored the option of an indoor pool featuring lap lanes, a children's area, water slide, and diving board that would be open all year. Depending on whether a renovation to the existing pool or a complete overhaul of the entire MAC facility is chosen, the project could cost anywhere from $1.04 million to $4.5 million, according to George Dines of Aquatic Design, Planning and Operations Company, Councilman Hunsaker, which performed the feasibility study and recently presented findings to city officials.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 26th. Paint Creek Principal to Join FSISD by Nathan Hewer. Fort Stockton ISD announced its latest addition to their administrative staff on May 23rd at the district's regular school board meeting. The additions included two new principals, an assistant principal, and a campus curriculum director. Current Paint Creek ISD principal Ken Wallace, who has been at the district in Haskell, Texas for the past 3 years, will be Fort Stockton High School's new principal starting this summer. The Greenwood, Texas native will arrive in Fort Stockton with some familiarity to the area. Wallace coached with Sammy Solis, newly named Fort Stockton ISD middle school principal, during a few years span at Pecos ISD. I coached at Pecos for 4 years. I'm a Midland kid. I'm very familiar with Fort Stockton, Wallace said. One of my best friends in the entire world is Sammy Solis. We coached together a few years, and it's a chance to work with someone I know. I'm not going to be a total stranger there. Wallace is finishing his 28th year in education after graduating from Saul Ross University with a Bachelor of Arts in English in 1994. The Paint Creek principal received his master's degree in school leadership in 2018. Wallace wore many hats during his time in education, serving as an athletic director, coach, athletic coordinator, and administrator. The Greenwood native looks forward to the next chapter in his career in Fort Stockton and is ready to adapt in a rapid manner. Wallace did so transitioning from a 6A district in Brazosport ISD to a 1A school in Paint Creek in 2019, and he is ready to do so again with 4A Fort Stockton. First thing when I come in, I want to get the pulse of the place. What are things we do well? What are things we can improve on? Then formulate some kind of goal to where we can attack the things that we feel we are weak on. Whatever it may be, Wallace explained. There's no blanket plan when you come in. You have to formulate it and tailor-make it to the situation. I want to find out what needs boosted, and we're going to focus on that. Castillo's tenure underway. Fort Stockton ISD's administrative cabinet has continued to grow in the past month as Julian Castillo began his duties as Fort Stockton Intermediate School Principal on May 9th. Castillo joins Fort Stockton ISD after spending 7 years at Buena Vista ISD as the school's principal and business manager. The Round Rock, Texas native graduated with his bachelor's and master's degree from Angelo State University. Castillo's wife, Edwina Castillo, is a speech pathologist at Fort Stockton ISD. Additional administrative hires that were announced by the district was high school campus curriculum director Timothy Carter and assistant high school principal Juan Saldana. Unofficial results. Cude wins Republican district clerk runoff. By Nathan Hewer. The gap closed significantly in the voter discrepancy for the Republican district clerk runoff in Pecos County, according to unofficial results that were posted after polls closed on Election Day. But the result proved to be the same, as Darla Cude received 10 more votes than Tammy Cash Lujan, 323 to 313, to unofficially win the seat for district clerk. Cude will be uncontested in the November midterm election. The voting result for the district clerk seat has the potential to change when official election results are released in May. Pecos County Election Clerk Sophia Franco provided the information regarding the pending ballots on May 25th. According to Franco, there are 49 mail-in ballots that needed to be postmarked by May 24th, and 8 with corrective action forms required, with a due date on May 30th. Official results for the election will be released on May 31st, due to Memorial Day on Monday. Cude received 136 more votes than Lujan in March's primary election, which recorded 718 additional votes for the clerk seat, received a total of 636 votes for this month's primary runoff election, compared to 1,354 votes during the election in March. Listed below are complete results of the primary runoff election for both parties by Pecos County voters. Republican District Clerk Darla Cude, 323 votes. Tammy Cash Lujan, 313. Republican Attorney General George P. Bush, 239. Ken Paxton, 354. Republican Commissioner General Land Office Don Buckingham, 306. Tim Wesley, 223. Republican Railroad Commissioner Sarah Stogner, 256. Wayne Christian, 291. Democrat Lieutenant Governor Mike Coller, 60. Michelle Beckley, 56. Democrat Attorney General Joe Jaworski, 32. Rochelle Mercedes Garza, 88. Democrat Comptroller of Public Accounts Janet T. Dudding, 38. Angel Luis Vega, 82. Democrat Commissioner General Land Office Jay Clayburgh, 32. Sandra Grace Martinez, 86. Democrat Member State Board of Equalization District 1 Laura Marquez, 59. Zero Stone Park to host Memorial Day service. U.S. military personnel who have sacrificed their lives while serving in the United States Armed Forces will be honored on Memorial Day at Zero Stone Park in Fort Stockton. The Memorial Day service will begin at 10 a.m. at the park, which is located south of the Pecos County Courthouse. Wreaths will be laid honoring each of our country's wars and conflicts, and those that served through them. Prayers will be said and proclamations from the county and city will be read, and the names of our beloved veteran family members and friends that have passed away over the past year will be read, and taps will be played. Joni McGee, Pecos County Service Veterans Officer, said, "So if you have lost a family member or friend that was a veteran, please feel free to contact me, Joni McGee, at 432-290-1616, and I will gladly add your veteran to the list of names read." McGee was a representative for local veterans at the Pecos County Commissioner's Court and Fort Stockton City Council meeting on May 23rd. Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster and Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander each presented McGee with a proclamation endorsing May 30th as Memorial Day. The city's proclamation read as follows: "Memorial Day each year serves as a solemn reminder of the scourge of war and its bitter aftermath of sorrow. This day has traditionally been devoted to paying homage to loved ones who lie in hallowed graves throughout the land, having sacrificed their lives that war might end. In tribute to these silent dead, it is fitting that we lift up our voices together in supplication to Almighty God for wisdom in our search for enduring peace." The Congress, in a joint resolution approved May 11, 1950, provided that Memorial Day should be set aside as a day of prayer for permanent peace. "Today and every day, let us remember that servicemen and women we have lost, and let us honor them by rededicating ourselves to strengthening our nation's promise. With love, grace, and reflection, let us honor our fallen fellow Americans, known and unknown, who sacrificed their freedom to ensure our own." Palileo to run for mayor in 2023 by Nathan Hewer. Former City Councilwoman Pam Palileo officially began her campaign to become Fort Stockton mayor in 2023 at the City Council's meeting on May 17th. Palileo served two terms on City Council from May 2018 to May 2022 and now feels it's the appropriate time to make a run to become mayor, considering her good friend and current mayor, Chris Alexander, will not be running for mayor in 2023. "I decided to run for mayor because I feel like I'm ready," Palileo said. "I believe my two terms on City Council, I gained valuable insight after 10 years of being publisher at the paper. Chris isn't running next year, and that's the push I needed to not be afraid to do it." Current Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander confirmed at the meeting on May 17th that he is serving his last term as mayor after an 18-year run in the position and as a councilman. The mayoral race will be held in May of 2023.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 19th. Annual seal coating set to begin. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. It's summer, and the annual street seal coating is underway. According to City of Monahans Code Enforcement Officer Richard Covington, the number of streets being repaired is less than previous years because of the cost of material. The tar used in the emulsion process and the final tar coating has increased in cost because of the oil and gas price increases. Quote, "We budget $150,000 for the seal coating project each year. In the past, the $150,000 has been used to repair about 150 streets. This year, we are hoping it is enough to do the 115 streets on the list. If not, we will do as many streets out of the 115 as possible," Covington said. Residents will receive notification to move any of their vehicles off the street, or the vehicle will be subjected to be towed. Quote, "Notification is in the form of notes left on vehicles or knocking on the resident's door," Covington said. Street seal coating is a five-step process that starts with spray killing the weeds, which involves 1 to 2 city workers. Next comes sweeping to clear the debris off of the surface, needing 2 people to do the job. two to four workers are involved in patching potholes. At least five workers complete the fogging. The last step is the actual seal coating itself, a minimum of 15 workers to spread the tar coat, as well as the gravel, and use the roller to finish the process. This is the final step, which will begin June 6th. Quote, fogging, emulsion, asphalt, and tar are all basically the same product, just different thicknesses for the particular process being done at the time, Monahan City Manager Rex Thee said. Preparation steps for the seal coating began about a month ago on some of the north side streets. Those that are waiting for the final seal coating process are North Alice, North Betty, and North Carroll. These streets have received the first four steps and are still waiting for the final tar and gravel coating. An estimated 24,000 gallons of tar at $3 a gallon and 1,083 tons of gravel at $24 to $25 per ton are to be used for the 115 streets targeted for seal coating project this year. Quote, the asphalt company was contacted and they have promised to supply us with tar on a daily basis to meet the required amount being used each day, Thee said. Treadaway arrested for allegedly striking child in face. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man was arrested Monday after allegedly hitting a kindergarten student in the face. Officers were called to Cullender Kindergarten on May 6th in reference to an injury to a child. Quote, Lieutenant Jeremy Kynes responded to the school and spoke to the staff who stated a male student reported to school with a bruise on his face, Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana said. As per protocol, Child Protective Services was notified, and after speaking to the child stated a male relative hit him in the face. The male relative was identified as J. Patrick Treadaway, age 51, of Monahans. Based on the investigation, an arrest warrant for Treadaway was obtained on May 13th, charging him with injury to a child with bodily injury, a third-degree felony. Treadaway turned himself in on the warrant to the Ward County Jail on Monday, May 16th. Bond was set at $10,000. Treadaway was released after posting the bond. If convicted, he could face 2 to 10 years in prison and/or a fine up to $10,000. Crash leads to recovered gun, woman arrested. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Monahans Police Department made an arrest after a stolen pistol was located during a crash in late April. MPD officers were called to the scene of Main and Seeley Streets in reference to a single vehicle crash in front of Delaney's Flowers around 2:30 a.m. While making contact with the driver, Jennifer Abeta, age 21, of 405 East 3rd Street, the responding officers saw a firearm located on the floorboard of the vehicle. Quote, at the time of the crash, the gun had not yet been reported stolen because the owner did not find the gun gone until found the vehicle had been burglarized, MPD Captain Christopher Quintana said. The call of the stolen gun came in around 5 a.m. in the 1200 block of South Gale Street when officers responded to a burglary call where a pistol was stolen out of a vehicle. Quote, the pistol matched the description of the pistol recovered from the crash earlier, and once the serial numbers were matched, an arrest warrant was issued for Abeta, Quintana said. Abeta was charged with theft of a firearm, state felony, and bond was set at $5,000. She posted the bond and was released. Abeta has not been charged with the vehicle burglary. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the TDCJ for any term of not more than 2 years or less than 180 days and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Burkitt advances to Skills USA Nationals. Recently, six Monahans High School students, Zach Burkitt, Mackenzie Burkitt, Charisma Carrasco, K. Carrie Ema Garcia Johnson, Morgan Simonton, and Micah Vega all competed in the Skills USA State Championships held in Corpus Christi, Texas. Skills USA is a nationally recognized CTSO that stands for Career and Technical Student Organization that is essentially a partnership of students, teachers, and industry working together to ensure America has a skilled workforce. Skills USA serves middle school, high school, and college post-secondary students preparing for careers in trade, technical, and skilled service, including health occupations. Skills USA's mission is to empower its members to become world-class workers, leaders, and responsible American citizens and improve the quality of our nation's future skilled workforce. Skills USA accomplishes this goal through its foundational framework skills training platform that focuses on a student's personal, workplace, and technical skills that are grounded in academics. Skills USA's vision is to produce the most highly skilled workforce in the world by providing an opportunity for success for each of its 370,000 plus members. The students competed in a variety of competitions that range from specific skilled areas from their occupational classes to professional leadership competitions that cover competencies from all occupations. Mackenzie Burkett competed in mobile electronics installation, electrical, electronic construction, diagnosis, repair, and professional development, and she placed fifth. Mackenzie also qualified in the Emblem Ceremony, Professional Leadership Team event, opening and closing a meeting competition. Unfortunately, there were conflicts with available judges and contest times, and Mackenzie and her team had to forfeit this contest. Lastly, she campaigned for a district officer position, started in February, and was elected to the officer slate as an alternate officer. Zach Burkett competed in action skills, professional leadership technical hands-on demonstration in precision measurements, and placed first. He also competed in marine service technology, boats, watercraft, technical skills, where he placed seventh. Charisma Carrasco competed in extemporaneous speaking, professional leadership, impromptu speech, where she placed 20th. She also competed in power equipment technology, small engine equipment, technical skills, where she placed 11th. Her third competition was Emblem Ceremony, professional leadership team event, opening and closing a meeting. Unfortunately, there were conflicts with available judges and contest times, and Charisma and her team had to forfeit this contest. Carrie Ema Garcia Johnson competed in pin design, professional leadership, state pin design and meaning, and she placed 19th. Morgan Simonton competed in early childhood education, professional leadership, lesson plan development, and lesson administration, and she placed 4th. Morgan also competed in the Emblem Ceremony, professional leadership team event, opening and closing a meeting. Unfortunately, there were conflicts with available judges and contest times, and Morgan and her team had to forfeit this contest. Micah Vega competed in the General Employability Career Ready Technical Information Contest. She did not place in the top three categories, so we were unable to verify her placement. Since Zach Burkett placed first in the Action Skills Competition, he will be advancing to the Skills USA National Competition. At this point, Zach is one of 53 students in the nation in his particular contest area to compete for the national title. Skills USA encompasses all 50 states plus 3 territories. The National Skills and Leadership Conference will be held in Atlanta, Georgia from June 20th through the 24th. Since McKenzie was elected to the Skills USA District Officer slate, she will be participating in the Skills USA Officers Summer Leadership Training Program. This leadership will be held at the Canyon of the Eagles Resort in Burnett, Texas, from June 5th through the 9th. She will be going through officer leadership and professional development competition training. If she qualifies at this event, she will advance to the Skills USA Washington Leadership and Training Institute, which will be held in Washington, D.C. from September 17th through the 21st. These students worked hard and dedicated many hours to preparing themselves for the competitions at hand. Their commitment to not giving up, managing their grades, and taking on personal leadership roles has proven to be very beneficial to all of them. The Skills USA team would like to say a huge thank you to our school board, administration, teachers, coaches, and mentors for their support and encouragement to our students. Sales tax still up. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. For the fifth consecutive month, sales receipts distribution for Monahans are up over the same periods of 2021. Monahans received $473,000 for the May distribution compared to $297,000 in May 2021, an increase of 58%. Year to date, the city has received $1,800,000 compared to $1,400,000 for the first 5 months of the year, an increase of 27%. Monahan City Manager Rex Thee is pleased with the report and hopes the trend will continue. Quote, I am delighted to see the May 2022 allocation of $473,000 is the highest since September 2019. May is up from last month by $125,000, up $175,000 over May 2021. This is good news, and we certainly hope the upward trend continues. The city of Monahans is $393,000, or 27% above the same time last year, Thee said. Thorntonville is the only community in the county that dropped, but all other communities in the county also received more money than last May and for the year to date. Thorntonville receipts, both for the month dropped, although showed an increase overall for the year. For May, Thorntonville received $4,196 compared to $5,065 last year, down by 17%, and is up by 54% for the year with a total of $34,278 compared to $22,225. Grand Fall received $11,265 in May, compared to $5,022 last year, an increase of 124%. For the year, Grand Falls' total receipts were up $52,000, 154% over 2021. Wickett received $30,000, up by 52% over last May's receipts of $20,000. For the year, Pyote is up by 35% from $98,000 to $134,000. Pyote was flatter both for the month and the year, but is still moving in a positive direction. Pyote received $22,000, up by 115% over last May's receipts of $10,000. For the year, Pyote is up by 8% from $71,000 to $66,000. In Reeves County, Pecos received $835,000, up by 34% for May, compared to $618,000. The yearly total is back up this month from the April total of $567,000. For the year, Pecos is up by 34% to $3,166,000, compared to $2,459,000. Balmoray increased by 11% to $10,000 compared to $9,300 in May 2021. For the year, Balmoray received $37,000, up by 7%. After no receipts for March and only receiving $6,200 for May, Toya is back down this month, receiving $3,800. This leaves the community down by 3% for the month, but still up for the year, with a total of $14,400 compared to $12,100. In Pecos County, Fort Stockton dropped 4% to $421,000 for May compared to $441,000. For the year, the town is still down, but showing gains by 8% with $11,654,000 compared to $1,817,000. Ira Ann receipts were up for May, $50,000, up by 60%. For the year, Ira Ann has received $165,121 compared to $165,776, a drop of 0.3%. In Winkler County, Kermit is up by 55% with a total of $207,000 and up for the year by 44% with a total of $795,000. Wink dropped for the second straight month with $31,000 compared to $42,000, a drop of 25%. But for the year, the community showed a larger drop to 11% with a total of $151,000 compared to $171,000. Andrews gained 11% for the month with $831,000 compared to $748,000. For the year, Andrews is down from last month, but still up for the year to 18% with a total of $3.3 million compared to $2.8 million last year, a gain of 18%. Crane remains down for the year by 7% with receipts of $371,000 compared to $403,000. But for the month, Crane gained 16% with May receipts of $88,000 compared to $75,000 in 2021. The city of Midland is up to $7.4 million, up by 24%. For the year, Midland is up by 30% with a total of $30.1 million. Odessa received $5.9 million for May, up by 20%, and $24.9 million for the year, up by 17%. Monahans, Andrews, Fort Stockton, and Ira Ann all assess a sales tax rate of 2%. Pecos, Crane, Balmoray, and Toya assess 1.5%. The City of Midland assesses 1.25%, and tax rate for Kermit and Wink is 1.0%. County rates for Midland and Winkler counties are 0.5%. Statewide, Texas Comptroller Glenn Hager sent cities, counties, transit systems, and special purpose taxing districts $1.2 billion in local sales tax allocations for May, 11.8% more than in May 2021. These allocations are based on sales made in March by businesses that report tax monthly.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.